Hello, and welcome to I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside, a show that might not make much sense, but damn we love pizza. With me today, I have one dude. Introduce yourself, dude.
Hi, it's Scott, also named Scott. Hi.
Yes, I am the original Scott.
I'm still not entirely sure that's accurate, considering I was the first person to be, conceived onto planet Earth. But okay, I suppose that is a podcast debate for another day.
Well, we never did settle which of us was the weird Coke variant for nicknames.
Exactly, shows up midway through season 3 as the lost cousin.
Yep. Oh, jeez, I'm Cousin Oliver.
I guess so.
No, better. I'm that weird little girl that the Cosby Show brought in after Rudy stopped being cute.
Oh, gosh. Exactly. You can't just go back in time and just change these people, You gotta stick with them. It's like the Harry Potter series.
Have you seen the newest movie?
I haven't. I don't really make plans to either. I'm not sure it's something that still interests me anymore.
It's one of the better movies, I think.
Oh, in terms of the Harry Potter series.
Yeah, in terms of Harry Potter, it's up there.
Okay. I'll give it a shot.
I'm not going to tell you to go.
Prisoner of Azkaban, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that, but that was my favorite. It was just, darker and a little bit more going on than the past couple.
Yeah, I'm actually not a fan of that one.
Really?
Really? I don't know. It just seemed like that was really the first one where they stopped trying to just translate the books to the screen. And the guy had not a lot of an idea of how to do that, You ended up losing way more plot than you should have, especially considering how much of the plot of that book ends up being important for the next 3.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I think they tried to get him for his visual style, because he was the guy who went on to do Pan's Labyrinth and that kind of stuff, and Children of Men. I guess they figured they could say, hey, take this book, it's pretty easy to adapt, and, just do some fancy stuff with it, and I'm sure it'll turn out fine. Go ahead.
Well, at this point, they've realized that if it's got, they could, shoot 2 hours of a turd gathering flies, and if Harry Potter's on the poster, they'd make a bajillion dollars anyhow.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, if you ever want to get callers at work, all you need to do is step up to the microphone and just say, Leafs, and instantly the phone lines will just explode. Everyone wants to talk about that, so. It's sad. That's how it is.
Yeah. Now, my other complaint about that movie was there was literally no scene transitions that did not involve something flying.
Something what?
Something flying. Like,
exactly.
Go out, zoom out a window and you'd see birds go by, or you do an established shot of a tree as leaves fall, and it was every scene. It was terrible.
You need to have more land speeder wipes, like in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, the wipes. I sort of liked that in the last movie, they're like, okay, we're running out of the regular wipes. Let's do checkerboards and diagonals and the spirally kind.
Yeah, exactly. Thank goodness we were spared from the horror of the Star Wars wipe.
Oh, no, that's going to be episode 7. That's episode 7 right there. Star wipes all the time.
So
let's move into pick of the week. You want to go first on that?
I would be more than happy to do that. My pick of the week, or my thumb, is squarely raised up for year-end top 10 lists. I think that is the very succinct, and it's a proud time-honored tradition of determining what is the best and what is the second best and what is 8th, because not a lot of people can do that. It's like professors in university being able to tell the difference between a C and a C minus and a C plus. It takes a very, very keen eye to be able to determine these things. So that is definitely my pick.
So you're telling me that any schmuck can pick out a gold, silver, and bronze, but figuring out who's number 7 versus 8 is the real skill?
That is exactly what I'm saying. That is it takes a keen observer to be able to pick up on those little subtleties.
Okay, so my pick of the week is going to Zuma Blitz, It just went live on Facebook, I don't know, the other day, and it's going to destroy my life, because I don't know what it is about Zuma, but it just consumes me.
Great Neil Young album.
Yes. Really weird PopCap game about frogs and marbles and Aztec weirdness.
Those Aztecs, they were a funny bunch. All their gold and predicting the world is going to end in 2012.
I was reading an article about how the people who did the math to say that 2012 was going to be the end of the world did it wrong.
Oh.
And that the world, in fact, ended about 4 years ago.
Oh, so we're safe.
I think we're safe.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Exactly. That's going to be a long 365 days of 2012, and I have to wake up and, you know, wonder if this is going to be the last day. Scary. I don't have to deal with that. Just want to go about my daily routine.
Technically, you have that angst every day, because you could be hit by a bus at any time.
Right, but I mean, you don't really walk around living in fear of that, right?
Some people do.
It's not a very fulfilling life. That ain't me. Occasionally, now and then, you know, you see a freak report on the news, and you're like, oh, that's kind of creepy. It could have been me. And you know, somebody in, you know, Wichita, Kansas. You kind of just forget about it and just go on with your life.
Getting down to business, we have our informal debate as to who is awesomer, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones.
Solid debate.
It is solid debate.
The question has been asked since the beginning of time, or, you know, the early 60s. I'm not sure which.
Yeah. It's a tough call. The early 60s might, in fact, be the beginning of time. Yeah, at least that's how our dads tell
us. You bet it.
You want to just debate the lineups? Because I think, you know what? Mick Jagger's just one of the great front men of all time.
Absolutely. You know, there's no doubt in my mind, or anyone else's, I should think, that he was the face of the Rolling Stones. And it's not so much the same when you look at the Beatles, because you have two true legends there. And, you know, no disrespect to George Harrison, but he's not quite on the same level of recognition as, you know, Lennon, McCartney. But, you know, and Ringo, the lovable drummer, was somewhere, you know, kicking around in the back. But it's kind of an interesting dynamic, because you had the Stones, who were clearly Mick Jagger's band, and, you know, you had the Beatles, who were kind of co-owned by Lennon McCartney. And that's not to say the Rolling Stones didn't do things, you know, in a team format, because, you know, it was all Jagger Richards. Even though that, you know, he was kind of, Keith Richards is kind of happy to just, you know, play away on his guitar and all the theatrics and stuff for Mick Jagger. But it's kind of an interesting dynamic, you know, how you have the one main guy versus, you know, the two kind of splitting it, even though both partnerships didn't always tend to work out so happily all the time.
Yeah, and I think the fact that the Beatles had, each of them, really, except for Ringo, had such strong ideas and personalities that was a detriment to the band. That the fact that even up until today, that they're still sort of feuding over, you know, which songs are really John's and which songs are really Paul's, and everyone sort of ignoring George's songs.
Yeah,
despite the fact that he really got to be a strong songwriter at the end. Before the end. Whereas you have this very clear team of Mick writes the lyrics, Keith writes the riffs, and everyone else just plays.
Yeah.
There's a definite sense of purpose, and everyone knows their job, and that's why I think you don't hear as much about the internal struggle with the band.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because that was kind of one of the straws that broke the camel's back in terms of Brian Jones and Mick Taylor, why they left the band, is because they were making substantial contributions to the songs, and they were not really getting the recognition from the Jagger Richards songwriting tandem that they felt were necessary, or were, you know, just they were not getting the true due they were supposed to, I suppose. And, you know, it's the same thing with the Beatles, because you have, you know, Lennon McCartney dominating so many cuts on an album. And I think the original agreement was that Harrison was allowed to have a maximum of 2 songs per album. And that was it. Everything else had to be, you know, Lennon McCartney, and the odd time they would get, you know, Ringo to sing or co-write.
And Ringo would get one song every other album.
Yeah, exactly.
But he would write, but he would come up with all the song titles for some reason.
Exactly. Had a bit of a offbeat attitude to kind of, you know, break up the seriousness of the other three. One of the the most interesting things I think about it is that, you know, you kind of did have a chance to, you kind of, everyone knows the four Beatles, right? You know, everyone knows what all four of their personalities are like, and not everybody knows that about the Rolling Stones. I mean, there's Mick Jagger and there's Keith Richards, and a few people know Ron Wood from his other work with Small Faces and whatnot. But, you know, if you ask somebody to name the drummer for the Rolling Stones, and 9 out of 10 people I don't think would be able to tell you his name.
Same thing for the bassist of the Rolling Stones.
Exactly.
That part of that is that they went through three of them, but the fact is that, yeah, Bill Wyman, who the hell's that guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Dick Taylor.
He wrote a really interesting, kind of a tell-all biography that really upset some of the other members, specifically Mick Jagger. It was kind of how he finally established his name for himself. But yeah, the rhythm section for the Stones, it was kind of just like, it was always kind of just like an afterthought. I don't know. Nobody, it never really broke through to the public like the all four of the Beatles did.
Let's debate the sound, because to my mind, the Beatles don't have a sound after, like, Sgt. Pepper. Like, the first few albums, you have this very jangly, cheesy love songs and happy-go-luckiness all penetrating throughout. And then after they go off and discover drugs and really just learn how to play their instruments incredibly well, they start going, you know, there's no two songs in the same genre on any of their albums. So the only reason they're immediately recognizable as Beatles songs is because people have spent decades worshipping the Beatles sound. So if you put two disconnected tracks, one from, say, Sgt. Pepper and one from Abbey Road or Revolver, and play them back-to-back to someone who was not familiar, they'd swear they were two different bands.
Exactly, yeah. You know, and they went through such an evolution in the early days when they were more, I guess, a pop band. And I don't really ever think that they, well, maybe with a few exceptions, but I always kind of tend to think of the Beatles as more of just like a strictly, just like a pop band, and the Rolling Stones were like a lot more dedicated to rock and roll. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, both sides kind of crossed over to the other now and then, but I think the Beatles' influences remain like fairly steadily into the pop camp, and you know, the Stones were always, you know, dedicated to rock and roll from day one. And the Beatles kind of had that phase in the early years, you know, for the first four or five albums, where they were just strictly, you know, we were going to be like a boy band. And of course, that was before the term was even invented, you know, just to show how much they changed everything about music. But they said, okay, we're gonna do this, you know, we're gonna play in these huge crowded stadiums and tour, and, you know, we won't even be able to hear ourselves or, you know, the words or the music, and everyone's just gonna be, you know, we're gonna sell at Shea Stadium, just screaming girls, we'll be fine. And then eventually I guess they must have got sick of that, and it's like, okay, we're gonna actually, you know, try and, you know, make some music that is actually, you know, a little bit more substantial. And, you know, they started coming out with Rubber Soul and Abbey Road, Rubber Soul and Revolver, and you know, eventually accumulating in Sgt. Pepper's. So it was kind of a natural progression. I think they just didn't want to be written off as kind of just pure pop artists, and they wanted to actually kind of try and make something of themselves. They were heavily influenced by the work of Bob Dylan. I mean, if you want to look at a guy who's, you know, that guy has never even come close to ever making like a pure, you know, pop song. They must have obviously rubbed off on them a whole lot, and it just, you know, after that, it was never to be the same again. You know, there was an added maturity and mental growth to their work.
And then we have the Stones, who have this very solid, like, Chicago blues sound that just permeates virtually everything they do. And they brought, you know, blues idioms and rock ideas and a whole lot of sex appeal into, you know, the music scene of the world.
Exactly. And they were really, you know, like you said, really heavily influenced by soul and by American blues music. And it's kind of interesting to see how the two bands started off in somewhat similar places, because the Beatles did a lot of, you know, kind of like R&B and kind of like soul covers in the early days. And they kind of moved away from that fairly quickly to kind of get like the sunshiny bubblegum music. But the Stones were always anchored in the blues and the soul sound, and, you know, they would always move forward and, you know, try and in the early days they had a lot more covers and less original songs than the Beatles did. But they would eventually kind of, you know, go in a different path than the Beatles did, exploring, you know, some I think, a little bit more gritty and kind of raw, not only content-wise, but sound-wise material, and, you know, kind of, like, explore, get a little bit closer to, you know, folk and a bunch of stuff that the Beatles never really got around to.
Talking about the gritty sound, I think the last few Beatles albums are just produced to hell.
Absolutely.
And there's all sorts of stories of them just sitting, mixing mono tracks and trying to jury-rig the sounds they wanted out of the terrible equipment at Abbey Road.
Exactly. I remember listening to Let It Be when I was a little kid, and I thought it was just fantastic. And I told my dad, you know, that's my favorite Beatles album. And he kind of just looked at me like I had three heads. Like, are you kidding me? Like, and you're absolutely right, because I mean, a lot of it is just really, really heavily overproduced, because they brought in, you know, Phil Spector, and he came in and he was famous for, you know, with the Ronettes and that famous wall of sound production, and everything just sounded, they tried to make like a really big, kind of like an epic kind of album, and I hate myself using the word epic, because I think it's overused in modern culture, but that's okay. But yeah, it's kind of just like a mishmash of stuff, and it just doesn't really flow very well together. But on the other hand, you know, you have Abbey Road, which I think, and this is, I'm not sure about this, but I think Abbey Road was recorded after Let It Be.
Yes, but released before.
Let It Be came out after Abbey Road.
Yep.
Which is kind of interesting. So, you know, it's kind of, I guess they kind of, you know, of the two, they kind of went out on the down note. Abbey Road to me is, and I'm not a big, I'll admit it right now, and this is a huge thing going forward, because I'm not a big Paul McCartney guy at all. Like, I just don't really enjoy a lot of his work for whatever reason. I think most of it is like really overly sappy, and you know, that's fine. There are people who like it, that's cool, but it's really not for me. Most of my favorite Beatles tracks are by, you know, they have a heavy John Lennon influence or George Harrison, but that's just me. But in this case, you know, the second half of Abbey Road is mostly dominated by Paul McCartney's influence, and I think that's, you know, the whole second half of Abbey Road is just, you know, like almost like one long song, just blended together. And I think that was, yeah, it's one of my favorite Beatles moments by far, if not, you know, my favorite, number one.
And just thinking of her, you know, Stones albums, is that even like, you can take tracks off Voodoo Lounge, which came out in 1992, and play them back to back with stuff from Rolling Stones 1 or 2 or Sticky Fingers, and it's like you can hear, it's like that's the Stone sound, that's them.
Yeah,
it's
dude. Yeah, exactly. And you know, the same kind of thing has happened to the Rolling Stones, who have certainly put out less good albums than the Beatles have by a long shot, but you know, that's not really a fair comparison, just because, you know, one band has been around for so much longer than the other. But the later, especially the later late 70s, early 80s Rolling Stones albums have just been like featured like really, really heavy production, and they kind of lost that grit that they had around, you know, when Beggar's Banquet and Let It Bleed and Exile on Main Street came out. You know, they just didn't have the same kind of, you know, raw, visceral edge to them that the middle period Stones records had when they came out. So it's, you know, it's funny that they've more or less had the kind of same career path in a number of ways, you know. Then I think the Beatles kind of their rough one is the White Album, and you know, they're just it's all very kind of like crunchy and loud sounding, and you know, it's not like really heavily overproduced. You know, the Stones kind of went through an extended period of that, and it just, you know, didn't really have just the one double album dedicated to it. It had a little bit more, but yeah, they've more or less, you know, kind of mellowed out with age, and, you know, kind of relaxed themselves into a little bit more production heavy work as time has gone on.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at sort of the discography, and I'm like, I remembered that they did in fact do a disco album, which was just disappointing.
Yeah, it surprisingly didn't play to their strengths.
Yeah, no. Emotional Rescue? Not that good.
Yeah, exactly. I will leave them stranded on that one.
But I actually sort of like the 80s, 90s Stones albums, even though they are they aren't as good. Like Undercover is nowhere near the quality of, like, again, Beggar's Banquet or his Enic Majesty's Request, but...
Right.
You know, Undercover and Voodoo Lounge are just good to listen to.
Exactly.
I will take them over most of the output over the 80s and 90s any day.
It's kind of funny how they were really influenced by each other, because as soon as Sgt. Pepper came out and it just blew the world away and just completely changed the face of music, they came out with Satanic Majesty's Request, which is, you know, viewed as kind of like a, like an off-brand knockoff, and they were trying to just kind of replicate the same success that they had, you know, just trying to change. And I don't blame them for that at all, because that was a, that was, you know, one of the huge, the biggest selling albums of all time. But I think Satanic Majesty's Request is kind of, now that a little bit more time has passed, people have been able to you know, kind of appreciate it as its own album and not, you know, constantly living in the shadow of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And it's surprisingly good. You know, I was initially hesitant, you know, just thinking the same thing after reading the reviews, and just like, oh, it's just like a knockoff. It's nowhere near as good. Rolling Stones from the mid 60s all the way to like the mid 70s, they did not release a bad album.
I can't think of one. But my thing is that for some reason there's something about the Stones where I don't think of whole albums when I think about the Stones. Like, the Beatles, exactly. I can't listen to individual tracks of the Beatles for a lot of things. Like, I have to sit down and I have to listen to all of Revolver. But for the Rolling Stones, I can pull, you know, 2-3 tracks off of each one and just be very happy. Like, 40 Licks is an amazing compilation, just for that reason. It's the best 2 or 3 off any particular album.
Like, exactly, and, you know, some of them didn't even, you know, make it onto albums. It was just single releases or EPs and things like that. So the first, and it's kind of a, I was thinking about this when we were starting it up, no pun intended. You know how they have the two Beatles compilations, right? Like the red one and the blue one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, someone's kind of curious like how those would rate against the first two Hot Rocks compilations, because, you know, when the Beatles Number One came out, of all the number one singles, then the Rolling Stones, you know, got off their ass and released 40 Licks, you know, which is their best 40 songs from throughout their career. So it's kind of interesting, you know, how they...
No, it was their best 38 songs and two new ones.
Yeah, that, yeah.
One was good and one was not.
not gonna argue with you there. That's hard.
I really like Losing My Touch, but it's not much of a Stones song.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a that kind of older age, kind of, you know, where we're kind of happy where we are in life, you know. They don't really have the same kind of problems that they did when they were young men, you know, trying to make their way in the world.
That's why punk rockers who don't make it switch over to country when they hit 30.
Perfect. There you go.
In terms of influence, it's hard to say. Like, I don't think the Beatles has much influence musically as people claim they do, because if they did, bass lines would not be as crappy as they are now.
Fair. Very fair.
Like, the bass lines that John Lennon wrote are incredibly melodic and interesting, but every other band since, the bass is just, what is it, B, G, D, A, B, G, D, F sharp?
Yeah,
something
exactly.
Like that.
I blame...
if they can manage four notes.
yeah, exactly. It's tough to pinpoint, you know, exactly what happened. I just think, you know, overall, music is kind of, you know, creativity is on the decline, and, you know, they can't really be held responsible for that, but they did the best they could in the time that they had. So, you know, it's a problem, but I wouldn't necessarily, you know, blame it on them. Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's obviously not their fault, but everyone talks about how influential the Beatles were as for later musicians, and I'm looking at current musicians and just not seeing it. It's like, maybe McCartney had more influence with the bubblegum pop sound, but
yeah,
it's just that what I see is that the Beatles paved the way for boy bands and the lamer excesses of the British invasion, and the Stones just seem to pave the way for more blues rock from Britain, and, you know, the roots of heavy metal and the roots of punk are in there.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And they kind of, did a lot to help, you know, kind of bring popularity to the blues. My dad always tells me this one story. The Rolling Stones went to America, they had a press conference, and, you know, somebody asked, hey, what are you guys going to do now that you're in America? They kind of just looked around there and were just like, okay, well, we're probably going to go see Muddy Waters. You know? And they said, oh, where's that? And it's just like, what? You guys have this national treasure and you're not even, like, you know, going to recognize them? It's ridiculous, you know? And they were doing things to, you know, kind of turn people onto the blues and, you know, like, hey, you know, you guys have all this great stuff here, you know, in your home country that you're not even paying attention to, so you guys, you better smarten up.
Yeah, and do we want to discuss the solo work afterwards for some of these guys?
Oh, like, goodness. Only if we can not bring up Wings.
Oh, no, we have to say Wings.
All right, I guess so. I was never a big Wings guy myself, but... You know, I guess they have their place. They have their popularity. You know, I was always more of a John Lennon guy personally. But, you know, in terms of popularity, I don't think it's even a question. I think Paul McCartney definitely out-trumps. Wow, yeah, that's not Trumps. John in that respect, for sure.
And then we have Harrison's attempts at his solo efforts. Like, it just shows how much they ignored Paul and John ignored him. That he had enough material to release 3 albums in the year after the Beatles broke up.
Exactly, and All Things Must Pass is just a phenomenal, phenomenal achievement. You know, you have 2 albums of great songs, and you have another album of, you know, him and a couple buddies, one of which is Eric Clapton. You know, just jamming, and it's fantastic. You know, it might have been the best thing that came of that ridiculous, you know, you're only allowed to have two songs per album. You know, he just had all this great backlog of material. You know, he's friends with Bob Dylan, and, you know, just turn him loose and the sky's the limit.
Yeah, I'm always sort of disappointed that George and Eric Clapton never formed like a real band.
Yeah. Oh man, can you imagine?
I can, and I tell you what, Clapton would still be bigger than Hendrix if that had happened.
I don't doubt it.
Like, George Harrison would have been bigger than Clapton, and Clapton would still be God.
Yeah, that's a lofty claim, but, you know, I certainly don't have any argument against that, for sure.
And the Stones solo efforts, yeah, like...
I think they speak for themselves when I say absolutely nothing.
Well, there's this really interesting, most of it's pretty bad, clearly they function better as a unit, but there's this great album of Rolling Stones covers that were put together, like... blues and jazz covers of Rolling Stones songs, put together by Charlie Watts and Tim Rise, who is the current touring saxophonist with the Stones.
Okay.
Like, it's a great album, and there's a lot of guest artists on it. Like, you get a good Sheryl Crow cover of Wild Horses, and 2 really amazing versions of Honky Tonk Woman. One of which is just, they brought Keith Richards in, it's like, do Honky Tonk, Keith, and let him go, and... it's amazing to listen to.
That is pretty amazing. Or at least it sounds like it would be by description.
Yeah, no. I can send you the tracks. They're just amazing.
I'm down.
But there's a... Do we want to talk about the movie careers of these bands?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, what do you constitute as a movie?
Well, I suppose we should talk about the Beatles movies.
Because the Rolling Stones... Oh, God. What is it called? You should know this. This is really embarrassing. Let's just talk about the Beatles movies in the
meantime.
Exactly, and we can edit this part out, I'm sure.
Okay. So we have, what was it first, Hard Day's Night?
Yeah, I believe so.
Which was, I think everyone remembers it for the scene where they're running from their fans, and that's all.
Yeah, exactly, hiding, you know, in all these different creative ways.
Like, I actually sort of like the Beatles movies, unlike some other movies motivated by rock stars, like, Elvis movies just suck.
Right.
But Hard Day's Night is just sort of fun to watch because it feels very silly.
Yeah, you know, they're just...
Everyone there knows it's a puff piece, and so they decide to have fun doing it.
It's fun, but, you know, there's some real merits to it.
And there was another live-action movie, which was Help. Just lame. Help. Yeah, Help was lame. And then there was the cartoon Yellow Submarine, which, for feature animation, does not hold up well.
No.
After
it's still,
the years.
Still enjoyable, you know, in its own right.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was an integral part of my childhood.
was it now?
Definitely. It influenced me. Never dropped acid, but definitely influenced me.
Got close.
Yeah, exactly. Tempted, teetering on the edge of the precipice, but never fell in once.
And there's a couple videos of their live shows. I don't know what was Magical Mystery Tour. Oh, that was a TV movie on the BBC.
I saw it on VHS, and it was not fantastic. The Rolling Stones documentary film that I was trying to think of is actually called Gimme Shelter, and it's the Altamont concert where an 18-year-old guy was stabbed to death, and it's one of the first kind of real murders caught on tape, that was widely kind of distributed. Raised a lot of controversy, and it's a fantastic film. I mean, I'm not sure it really counts as like a movie.
Yeah.
But it definitely kind of follows the Rolling Stones around, and you get a kind of idea of what life on the road with them would have been like.
Actually, coming back to sort of more direct comparisons, I think Sympathy for the Devil is a much better song to motivate for murder than Helter Skelter.
Exactly. Exactly. Even, Charles Manson versus, a bunch of... And how bad of it was an idea? Who was the guy who thought, oh, okay, we're going to get the Hell's Angels to do security here?
It was the Grateful Dead's idea. That's already kind of a strike against it.
What were you thinking? Oh, Jesus. And anyways, the Rolling Stones were never really interested, I don't think, in that whole kind of, let's star in a film and be famous.
No, like Mick Jagger did do some movies. Like they, there were never Rolling Stones movies, but Mick Jagger did try to act.
He did. He did have an acting career, I see. Well,
like I believe he played some. There was some movie about some Australian folk hero that Jagger starred in for some reason.
Jesus, good for him.
Yeah.
Ned Kelly.
Oh. Yeah, Ned Kelly, that was it.
Good for him.
Oh, man. Mick Jagger auditioned to be Dr. Frankenfurter for the 75 Rocky Horror movie. That could have been fun. Like, as good as Tim Curry was in that, Mick Jagger, come on.
I'm speechless. I got absolutely nothing. I don't even want to think what it would have been like with Mick Jagger. That would have just been... I'm glad they made the decision that they did. Let's go with that.
Well, now that I think about it, it's... Maybe better that Tim Curry did it, just because that really launched Tim Curry's career, so we wouldn't have had some of the more fun Tim Curry moments.
Exactly. The one week where I killed him in Brutal Legend, and then, later on that week I killed him again in the Dragon Age.
Yeah, always good times.
Absolutely. And I think it's kind of interesting because the difference is almost kind of night and day between, the Beatles had the fun films and they're just like, running away from fans, that's cool. And, in the Rolling Stones documentary, somebody gets stabbed to death and that's just...
Well, they also got a Scorsese documentary, which followed them around as old men.
Everyone knows how real Scorsese. That's like the most gritty stuff you can come up with, and just awesome. So it's just, different... They really are just incredibly different bands,
And part of that was engineered from the beginning, was that the day the Beatles appeared on Ed Sullivan, the Rolling Stones manager, it's like, told them, okay, go burn your jackets and stop cutting your hair. Exactly. We're doing something. We aren't going to be those guys.
Bloody mop top. We don't need that.
I'm also going to say that, take this moment to say that Martin Scorsese's blues documentary, much better than Ken Burns' jazz documentary.
Oh, without question, for sure. Ken Burns, Jesus Christ. Anyways, that's another topic for another podcast.
You want to launch into the fan base for the Beatles versus the Stones? Because I think there's some interesting debate there.
For sure. Well, I mean, the classic image of the Beatles fan base, it's got to be hordes and hordes of screaming girls, right? Constantly on the run, just that iconic image of them, booking it down a street, being chased by a thousand screaming women. The Rolling Stones were pretty much like the antithesis of that. They were just,
They realized, why should we run from women?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, baby, how's it going? So, just kind of, I didn't really have that kind of wholesome, I'm going to, be able to take you home to my mom kind of image about them, which is all right by me. But as the Beatles kind of matured and got more into the kind of the drug years, and I think there was more of a convergence between the two audiences, you know. It's kind of just like they had more in common, you know, back then.
I just think about the current fan base for the Beatles, and it's a lot of old guys who dig both, and, you know, moms who still maintain their crushes on Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
And then there's all these hipsters who are forever, you know, gobbling the cock of John Lennon.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny how when someone dies prematurely, their legend just grows.
If Hendrix hadn't have died, Clapton would still be God.
Don't doubt it. Don't doubt it.
The Rolling Stones, I don't know. Like, there doesn't seem to be any sort of hardcore fan base for them. It's just this band that everyone kind of digs. No one's rabid or vocal about it, but you put Gimme Shelter on or, you know, any of the early singles, and everyone's just sort of bopping along.
Exactly. The one thing I will say is that not a lot of people I know are big fans of Mick Jagger's voice, and it kind of has that, you know, that nasally kind of sneer, and that Paul McCartney and John Lennon's voices were a lot more kind of easy on the ears, you know. It didn't really kind of challenge you. It was kind of just more, you know, accepting. It was like, oh, that's nice.
Well, the Beatles were also very interested in sort of playing with vocal harmonies. Like,
yeah,
very few pop acts do three-part harmony on songs.
And yeah, the Stones were kind of a little bit more, you know, all about the whole in-your-face kind of attitude and stuff.
It's like, we want to have sex, drink beer, have fun, do drugs, and do all sorts of crazy shit, and we don't care how you think of it. So it's this very loud, very in-your-face sound.
Yeah.
But yes, okay.
What do we have next here?
I believe next, let's do favorite individual members. Who's your favorite Beatle?
Gotta be, I would think, George Harrison, you know, an absolute landslide. I mean, he was kind of the quiet, kind of like mystical. John was always, you know, crazy and you know, getting in people's faces. And Paul was kind of like, you know, the sweet, kind of like I said before, the guy who you kind of take home to mom, if you're a girl.
Yeah.
Important disclaimer there. yeah, George was kind of always, he was just very kind of laid back and, you know, he's just very quiet and easygoing. Technically speaking, he was the most proficient with his instrument. I mean, he was an absolute virtuoso on the guitar. Nothing against him for the you know, getting clapped in a stand-in on the While My Guitar Gently Weeps solo, but, you know.
Well, that solo with him also doing vocals probably would have broken anyone, really.
Exactly. You know, you can't have too many good things.
Yeah. Like, he chose to focus on the vocals just so he could have something that would stand right next to Yesterday, I think.
Exactly.
Like, that's what I think While My Guitar Gently Weeps is. That's his ballad that he wanted to write, so that he'd have something that when people talk about Yesterday and Eleanor Rigby, it's like, and then there's While My Guitar Gently Weeps by George right there with it.
Yeah.
I would pick
for sure. It's got to be George.
No, I'm a huge troll, so my favorite Beatle is Eric Clapton. My favorite John Lennon tune is Why Don't We Do It in the Road, and I think my favorite Beatles album would be, I believe, Revolver.
Hard to pick against Revolver, you know. Very difficult. Very, very... I would have to say the same. And if I had to pick a favorite song, oh, God. It's cliche, but I gotta go A Day in the Life.
Now, that's actually really not the cliche, because, you know, you say A Day in the Life, and you immediately think of 12 other songs that probably deserve the slot more.
Yeah. Well, no, that was like, the one that always stuck out the most with me, you know, the... Da, 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 da. Just the huge, you know, string section backing them up. It's awesome. Love it. Love it.
And favorites on the other side. So favorite player, favorite album, favorite song for the Stones.
I really like Brian Jones. I mean, he was always kind of the guy who always got picked on by the rest of the band. And, you know, he was a really talented multi-instrumentalist. I mean, there's not anything with strings that Brian Jones does not know how to play.
Yeah.
On record. And, you know, he was always kind of awesome. So, yeah, I like Brian Jones, even though he kind of, you know, had that unfortunate drowning accident in the former house of the guy who wrote Winnie the Pooh's Pool. Yeah.
Well, the only way to leave the Stones is feet first.
True. Very true. Let's see. Favorite album. Probably going to say Exile on Main Street. I'm not usually a fan of double albums, just because I feel like there's just too much material and, you know, not enough quality control, but That might be the one exception. I just think that is enough different things are done throughout the course of the album to keep it interesting. I can listen to that one all the way through, and it's tremendous. I'm a big fan. And favorite song? Oh God, come back to me. I'll think on it.
For me, I'm gonna say Keith Richards, just because you have to admire a man who looks that bad getting up there and still playing phenomenally well.
I bet and you anyone, don't have trouble getting the ladies either.
Yeah, no. Like anyone who does a 5-string guitar just earns major props.
Yeah.
Because it's one thing to play a 5-string. It's one thing to play a 5-string and make it sound like a 7-string the way Keith does.
Right.
For album, I'm gonna say Beggar's Banquet, and favorite song is gonna be Sympathy for the Devil off that same album. Beggar's Banquet just seems. It's just this solid mix of just really great jams and things you just want to walk around listening to all day.
Can't argue with those. I mean, all good picks, you know. That's the thing with the Stones, is that they don't have as many, like, good albums as the Beatles do. But their good albums are just so, so, so good, for lack of a better word. Oh, my God. They don't get it right often, but when they do get it right, it is just ridiculous. It is unbelievable. God. Favorite song, I guess. Don't Think Less of Me, but I really like Under My Thumb. Ridiculous,
Under My Thumb is
misogynistic
fun.
Song, but you know, it has such a cool vibe to it. You know, it just sounds like just such a badass, and just the instrumentation. You know, you have the Brian Jones playing the marimba in the background. It's just, you know, that kind of tropical feel to it. It's good, man.
Well, the marimba bit just gave the marimba bit was what gave playing keyboard percussion in high school band just a little bit of cool, was that you could sit there and do the lick from Under My Thumb on the bottom keys of your marimba or xylophone, and you'd be cool again. It's like you're sitting there behind the marimba.
Exactly.
No one likes this, but then you go, and you'd get some nods from the guys who knew what you were doing, and a lot of time that was usually just the guy leading the band.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. It just sounds like a cool song. I don't necessarily support
the message,
but you know, whatever.
Whatever. It's got a beat and you can dance to it.
Exactly. That's the main thing at the end of the day. Who cares about the lyrics? Just give me the beat.
Yeah. No, that's another thing, is the Beatles were just so lyrically focused that some of their songs suffer from it.
Kind of weighs them down, you know.
The lyrics are so amazing, but the music is kind of lame for a number of their songs. Alright, now let's get into the meat of this, why we all showed up here today. It's who wins in a fight.
I don't know how anyone can pick, are we talking right now, or are we talking...
Well, right now it's no contest, because it's two guys on five, and apparently the Stones are invulnerable to everything.
You can't kill Keith Richards, he will never die.
No, he won't.
He's
fueled by...
Or the devil, or both.
But let's say 1967, all of them in their prime, in a fist fight.
I'm not sure anyone would win, because I think the Beatles are so experienced at running away from trouble that they would just, you know, get the hell out of there right away, you know? Like, as soon as the Stones threw down, you know, pulled a knife on them, they'd just book it, you know? And the Rolling Stones wouldn't be able to find them, because they're just so good at blending in, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the scenario, isn't it?
That's
the Stones would win if they could catch them.
Oh, definitely. They would just knock the crap out of them, but, you know, you have to find them first.
Yeah.
That's the trick. It's too bad. I wouldn't mind seeing Paul McCartney get one upside the head. He was on Saturday Night Live this past, Saturday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Saturday Night Live's still kind of lame.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Hard to say.
That's another topic, but I will say that the problem with Saturday Night Live is that they aren't the only sketch show in the game anymore.
Exactly. Bring back the funny.
Like, when they started, they could pick all the best talents and not have to worry.
Pretty much, yeah. And now it's
But then everyone started doing their own sketch shows, and now it's like each one has about 2 good writers and a handful of decent actors, and none of them are especially good for it.
Yeah, I'm not...
Like, if you could cherry-pick the best guys from SNL, the best guys from Mad TV, and the best guys from... what's that other one? I don't remember. But the best 2 guys from every sketch show on TV right now.
Superstars.
You'd have 1960s, 1970s SNL all over again.
Wouldn't that be something?
Either that, or they just need to hire twice as many writers and rotate them, because the good guys can't hit something every week.
It's interesting, you know? It's like you said, you know, it's not the same game that it used to be. It's very much more open.
Mm-hmm. And the other problem is that the internet has made being a sketch comic artist a lot easier too, because you can just put out a 4-minute video a week and get a bajillion YouTube subscribers.
Exactly. Anybody can be a stand-up comic now, you know?
Well, part of it is, I think the internet sketch comics are actually better. Like, Loading Ready Run is way funnier than SNL. Derek Comedy is some of the best, you know, sketch stuff I've seen in ages. And I'm glad that, well, at least one of them is getting, like, TV work now.
Thank God. Better than Power Rangers.
But much better off than the Power Rangers.
Exactly. Bring the conversation full circle. Power Rangers.
Full circle.
Woo!
All right. I think we may have exhausted our topic for this afternoon.
Exactly. Yeah.
But so, I will say,
great conversation.
Yeah. To our listeners, that we are going to be coming back. Scott and I are going to be coming back to do another debate for The Who versus Led Zeppelin. And if you want to see us debate any other musicians, feel free to leave that in the comments or something.
Just write a little note in the box, drop it in.
Yeah.
Make sure it gets to us. You know, we will take all challengers. No job is too big. No fee is too big.
Actually, that's another thing we should do. We should have a battle of the movies where we watch Hard Day's Night and Spinal Tap.
Oh no contest. Spinal Tap is just amazing, but I'm for it.
Yeah. Actually, no. Let's just settle that now. Spinal Tap wins.
Yes. Save us a valuable episode of recording time.
All right. So, see you all next time.
See ya.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside.
I thought they smelled bad on the outside. Please don't agree on comments. License. Check out our website at sbopodcast.blogspot.com. Check us out on Twitter at sbopodcast or our Facebook page at I Thought They Smelled Bad on the Outside. Or kick me an email at sbopodcast@gmail.com.